Hare Krishna. I welcome all of you. Some of the most intelligent students in this economic capital of India, Mumbai. Lord Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that among millions of people, very few are interested in spiritual inquiry. So all of you are few among millions who have come to inquire and empower yourself with the greatest power in all of creation, the power of faith. Nowadays, there is a power crisis in this world, and people talk about different kinds of power: solar power, thermal power, atomic power, nuclear power. However, all these powers are very superficial and external, and there are higher powers in front of which this power becomes useless. We know the former president of America was the most powerful man in the most powerful country in the whole world, and he was overpowered by a stupid urge, because of which eventually he was impeached and the whole American nation disgraced. So the nuclear power may be able to destroy the whole world, but it cannot destroy the bad habit of one person. It cannot transform the heart of one person. It is completely ineffective with respect to that. And this unfortunate incident is a glaring testimony to that. But this power of faith, it can change and transform the hearts, the habits, and the lives of people. All the other powers, they can superficially, externally illuminate the world. But it is only the power of faith that can illuminate the heart. So let us try to understand what this power is and how we can access it in our life. Next, please. So the Oxford Dictionary defines faith as firm faith without logic. That is their definition. Firm faith, especially without proof or without logic. However, the conception that most people have, doubt is a tendency to disbelieve. And people think, I think science deals with facts and religion deals with faith. So they feel, why should we bother about faith? Let's deal with facts. Let's stop being religious and let's be scientific. However, it is not that faith is required only in religion. Faith is required in every walk of life. Let's see how. So when the WCTC disaster took place, at that time, the week after that disaster, the air traffic plummeted down by 50%. People are scared. If I go in a plane and that is hijacked and that collides with somebody, I lose my life. Therefore, they felt, I don't want. But after 1 week, what do you think happened? Again, the air traffic came to normal. Because they felt that we can't live. We have to go on with our life. So, was there a guarantee after 1 week that no more planes will be hijacked? No guarantee. But still, when people like enter into a plane, they are putting faith. Many planes, when the plane lands safely, people clap. It's a success that the plane has landed safely. So, it's just getting into a plane, which is such a glamorized act. That's an act of faith. What if the plane malfunctions? In the Vedic times, there were bullock carts. Now, if two plane collides, nothing exists. If two bullock carts collide, nothing happens. Isn't it? So, getting into a plane is an act of faith. Next. Not only that, just riding a car. When you ride in a car, either our car may go out of control or someone else's car may go out of control. And we may go out of the world. Who knows? In the West, the conception is that India is the land of snake charmers. Oh, they have these people who play the instrument and the snakes dance. Of course, now they think India is the land of software engineers. But earlier they were thinking snake charmers. And they thought if you go on the roads of India and if a snake bites you, you will die. Therefore, don't go to India. But statistics show that the number of deaths due to snake bites annually is less than the number of deaths due to road accidents annually. What does that mean? Traveling on the roads is an act of faith. What does faith mean? Faith means, especially the way people refer to in religion. Say, why should I put faith in God? And I dedicate my life to God. If at the end of life I find there is no God, then what will happen to me? That means they feel that you follow a process and expect a result. You follow the process of religion and expect the result of liberation or reunion with God, happiness. And what if I don't get it? That means their idea of faith is you follow a process expecting a result, but if you don't get the result, then that is an act of faith. So that same process is there in every walk of life. When we go on the street, we are going on the street, following the process of going on the street, expecting the result that we will reach the destination. But is that guaranteed? No. So, not only traveling in a car, traveling in a local. That's an act of faith. Not only that, taking education. So, faith is required every stage of our life. When we take our education, we expect that now I'm spending so many years in this college and I expect to get a degree and a job. But the process is education, the result is employment. But is the result guaranteed? Thousands of students graduate into unemployment. So is education not an act of faith? Sometimes we go in a particular field, and by the time you pass out, that field is not so much in vogue. Then people don't have a career. So then when the person thinks, I'm going to be a millionaire, now I got a degree. But then he takes up the job, maybe he gets into a company. Now, employment is also an act of faith. We expect that I'm working for this person or this company and they will give me a good career. But then the company itself may close down. What can we do? So when Enron closed down, the next morning, American National Television showed the chief executive of Enron, one of the chief executives. He was on the streets with a big placard on his chest. I want a job. The person who was one of the top executives the previous day, the next day he was on the streets. That's an act of faith. And the faith was broken. Go ahead, please. So, faith begins with birth. When we are born, what do? We suck the milk from our mother. At that time, we have no capacity to doubt. Now, if the mother is like Putana, who wanted to poison Krishna, we will die. But at that time, we have no capacity to doubt. So faith is natural. But because of social and other influences, our natural faith is clouded over by doubt. So this is the situation in America. The job insecurity is so much that you may go to office and the boss will give you the pink slip. You go to office, there is no guarantee you will have your job. Next. And if you come back home, there is no guarantee you will have your wife. So, this is an unfortunate situation because the women there are fickle, and whichever woman feels that this man will give me more enjoyment, he'll go with them. So, these people, they get shock of their life. Lose your job, lose your wife. Let me lose my life also. Seem like that. That's why suicides are increasing. When Srila Prabhupada went to the West, he challenged the Americans. What is your progress? You made big, big skyscraper buildings and then you climb on top of them, jump down and commit suicide. The World Health Organization says that there are 1 million people who commit suicide every year. Now this figure 1 million is more than the number of deaths due to wars and murders combined together. That means whenever there is a war, we are so concerned, oh, there should not be unnecessary loss of life. If a serial killer is on the move, the police are out to nab him. But more than the number of people being killed by others are the people being killed by themselves. So the World Health Organization calls suicide is a tragic social health problem. So that's because people just don't have faith, either in themselves or in God.
So go ahead, please.
So this is okay. We show that now, when we go, it is not that every stage of life. So I said, when we are born, we need faith. When we travel around, we need faith. When we take education, we need faith. When we have a job, we need faith. When we get married, we need faith. And at least in marriage, there is some discrimination. You can choose the spouse. But generally, what comes after marriage? Yes? What happens after marriage? Yeah, 1 plus 1 becomes 11. And the necessities multiply. But one more member is added. So the point is, when we beget a child, is there any guarantee what kind of child it will be? He may be a very violent person, even a very unruly child. And that's what we see most parents, their children become headaches and heartaches for them. But does that mean other parents stop begetting children? No. Marriage is an act of faith, but there is some discrimination. But childbirth is an act of complete faith. Blind faith, because you don't know what is going to happen. The child may be deformed, he may be congenital disease, or he may be a malevolent, violent child. So we need faith at every walk of our life. When we go to doctor and doctor does the surgery, we allow him to open our stomach. He may take out a kidney or something. We will never come to know, but we put faith. When we go to a hotel and we eat food, now the waiter may put poison in the food if our enemy has bribed him. Do we check every morsel of food? If you go to a barber and you offer him his neck and his knife is at our neck. If he moves his knife, we will move no more. Isn't it? So it's faith. What to speak of all these activities, even sitting right now. Sitting in any house, that's an act of faith. And the person who constructed the building didn't use substandard cement. That it won't collapse on my head. So we can't live without faith. It is impossible. Faith is essential at every walk of life. Yes. So people have this saying, is seeing believing? They say, if you show me God, as was the argument of our Panditji, kisne Bhagwan ko dekha hai? So, if you show me God, I will believe in Him. So, seeing is believing, that is the slogan. But is seeing really believing? It appears very catchy. So there are things which we see, but we don't believe. Here we see. Yes. What are the things that we see? There, in that concave mirror, the face becomes deformed. You know, a beauty queen may become like a witch. Or the horizon. Does the horizon actually exist? Does the sky and the earth meet anywhere? Then a mirage. There appears to be water. So now, a dumb animal like a camel, he sometimes chases after the mirage. And then he reaches, there's no water, there's just burning sand, and he goes to the next. He keeps going. Now, on the other hand, a human being, when he sees the mirage, he understands it's a mirage. So he doesn't go after it. That means, seeing is believing philosophy costs the camel his life. And what saves the life of the human being is his refusal to follow seeing is believing. So, if a person lost in a desert follows seeing is believing, he'll just keep chasing after the mirage. So, the sign of human intelligence is to not believe whatever you see, to use your intelligence to discriminate. And similarly, previous please, when we see in the distance, the two railway lines appear to merge together. But, if they meet, we will not meet our relatives. It will be accident. So, it doesn't work. So, there are things which we see, but we don't believe. And conversely, next, there are things which we don't see, but we believe. So, who among us has seen historical personality Gandhi? But we all know he exists. Of course, people have some Munna Bhai now, but that is different. They have not seen the personality Gandhi. So, everybody believes. Most people have not gone to America, but they believe America exists. That's based on faith in what they have read or heard. Similarly, How many have seen electrons? As was mentioned, how many have seen electricity? Somebody says, I don't believe electricity. Okay, put your hand in the socks, rocket. You won't exist to believe. Isn't it? So, we see the effect. Illumination, we understand that electricity exists. Similarly, how many of us have seen time? We see time as measured on a clock. But we cannot see time per se. Nor can we see our own mind. But does the mind not exist? Somebody says mind doesn't exist and try to study. At that time the mind proves its existence. Isn't it? Makes it so difficult. So, if in the future anybody asks, says, seeing is believing, we can give this two-point refutation. There are things which we see but we don't believe, and there are things which we don't see but we believe. So, that's why seeing is believing is actually childish and foolish. The sign of intelligence is to use the intelligence to understand what exists and what doesn't exist. Next. Yeah. So, what we discussed was, material life at every stage and every moment requires faith. Not only that, even science requires faith. How is that? Now this is a statement of Albert Einstein, every good theory should have a supporting observation. But there are concepts within science like dark matter. When the structure of the universe, they propose that there is some matter that is existing which is intrinsically unperceivable. But they say it exists. They propose there is a force called anti-gravity. Now gravity itself cannot be seen. But anti-gravity is doubly invisible. Gravity is invisible to the mundane eye, but anti-gravity is invisible even to the scientific eye. So, but still they say it exists. How is that? Go ahead. So, people say science is progressing. Are you saying scientists are they God? But actually, science has progressed, but the progress has been a progress in ignorance. Now, what does that mean? And Mother Yashoda was trying to tie Krishna. Now, when she was trying to put Krishna around her waist, the rope around Krishna's waist. And the rope was 2 fingers short. Now, according to the Vedic literature, the universe comes from the Lord's body. It's a manifestation of his intelligence. The scientists are trying to rope the universe with their theories. We try to conquer the universe, understand the universe, grab it with our intelligence, with their theories. But their theories are also falling too short. What is that too short? One, the more scientists know, the more they realize how little they know. A simple example. When man thought, we will go into the space and we'll conquer space. And then man went in space and it was considered as proof of human greatness. So to the uninformed, the space probes were a proof of human greatness. But to the well-informed, the space probes proved human smallness. Because after we went into space, we found that we are so insignificant. So one of the astronauts said, the first vision of the Earth was not just a massive colossus of land and water, but a tiny ball in the vastness of space with missile-like objects hurtling by. So now scientists say there are as many galaxies, there are as many stars in the sky as there are grains of sand on all the beaches of the world. And our sun is just one of those stars. And the earth is just one small planet going around the sun. So for the well-informed, the space probes proved how small we are. So, increase in knowledge leads to increase in knowledge of ignorance. That means scientists came to know how little we know. There is so much to know. Similarly, when scientists in the macroscopic, when scientists went to the microscopic, they found that they thought the atom is just one small fundamental particle, which Dalton thought. And then now scientists are saying, the atom is like a universe. It's awesome. So now we have realized how little we know. So this is the first point. The more we know, the more we realize how little we know. So although information is increasing, understanding is not increasing. That's why that is one shot. Now what is the second shot? So that's why science proves. Go ahead, please.
So this is story of our Dr. Frog.
This Dr. Frog, he was the head of a community of frogs living in the well. And one day a devotee frog came from the Atlantic Ocean. Hopping he came. And he came to the well. And the other frogs saw him. He looked very intelligent. So they took him the most intelligent frog among them. Dr. Frog. So Dr. Frog said, "So, where have you come from?"
"I have come from the Atlantic Ocean."
"Atlantic Ocean? What is that?"
"It is a vast body of water."
"Vast body of water? How vast?" "Half as big as this well?"
"No, sir, it's much bigger. Much bigger than this well."
"Much bigger than this well? Twice as big?"
"No, much bigger."
"Four times as big?"
"Oh, much bigger."
"10 times as big?"
"No, sir, it's much, much bigger."
"Impossible! Such a body of water cannot exist."
"No, sir. You come with me and I will take you to the Atlantic Ocean."
"That is unscientific."
"What do you mean, sir?"
"According to my scientific method, only those things exist which can be seen inside this well. If you want me to believe in the existence of the Atlantic Ocean, you have to bring the Atlantic Ocean here, into this well."
"Thank you, sir. You can be happy in your well. I am going back."
So Srila Prabhupada would often tell this story. What does it mean? Our Dr. Frog refers to the scientists. Not necessarily the scientists, the atheistic scientists. And the devotee frog refers to the devotee. So the ocean refers to the vast spiritual realm comprising of soul, God and the spiritual world. Whereas the well represents sense perception. What we can see with our eyes. Seeing is believing. So now, according to scientific method, only those things exist which can be seen or perceived with the senses or at the most conceived with the mind. We should be able to imagine it. But if we can imagine or with our intelligence understand God, if God is within our conception, then our conception becomes greater than God. Then how is God supreme? So with our conception, we cannot understand how an elephant can go through a needle. But that is God. He is beyond our conception. So now, as our devotee frog said, "You come with me and I will show you the Atlantic Ocean." Similarly, the devotees tell the atheists, "You come with me, you follow a process and you will be able to see God." But they say, "No, no following any process. You bring God within my sense perception. Show me God." Well, that is not possible. Can the Atlantic Ocean be brought to the water, to the well? If the Atlantic Ocean comes to the well will not exist, Dr. Frog will not exist. Isn't it? So that's not possible. So it's an unreasonable demand. And to say that Dakti exists outside the well, that is narrow-minded fanaticism. Similarly, to say that that which cannot be seen with our senses does not exist, that is fanaticism. That is what unfortunately atheistic scientists do. Go ahead. Let us now try to understand the scientific methodology, how it works. So this is a study on the color of birds. Slow down, please. Study on the color of birds done by Dr. John Birdwatcher, who is a PhD in ornithology. That is the study of birds. Yes, please. Yeah. Volume, volume. Second mic. Go back. Yeah. Sound is then repeated. Increase the volume for the time. Go back, please. So this is applause for the study which is being started. So this is a study done to determine what is the color of the birds. So Mr. John Birdwatcher is using his eyes and an additional pair of eyes and a trusted assistant to make sure that his observations are correct. And his goal is to see all birds within the visible range of the observer. So let us see how he starts the study. The first bird he observes, black. Okay? Observes many, many birds. Twenty birds are black. Now he has completed his study. After exhaustive study of the bird species, we can conclude on the basis of extensive evidence that all birds on planet Earth are black. He's observed 20 birds and this is his theory. Next. Now, 25th bird is black. Black bird theory confirmed by scientists all over the world. Nobel Prize for black bird theory. 28th bird, black. 33rd bird is white. Bad data. One more bird. 37th bird, black. More bad data. 40th bird, white. We are on the verge of a major breakthrough in ornithology. Now, 64th bird. Grand unified theory proposed. All birds are either white or black. So new theory confirmed. New theory confirmed. Again. New theory confirmed beyond all doubts. Nobel Prize for unified bird theory. Birds are either white or black. Now the bird is red. More bad data. So, now how does this applicable in science? Newton discovered the laws of mechanics in 17th century. That's like observing certain things and said, okay, these are the laws which apply everywhere. That's like he observed 20 birds and said all birds are black. But then in 20th century, research in the microscopic world showed that Newton's laws were not applicable for atomic particles and their motion and behavior. So they were considered inapplicable. Then not only that, for the Max Planck proposed the quantum physics to explain the behavior of subatomic particles. So that was a breakthrough. So Newton's theory was no longer applicable there. So then also in the macroscopic world, that means universal level, for the motion of very fast objects, very big objects, it was not applicable. There also Newton won. When Albert Einstein proposed the general relativity theory to explain the motion of, to explain cosmic phenomena. Go ahead. Then, in the 20th century now, Newton's laws, which were once considered universal, are now applicable only in a narrow range for two conditions. For large objects, that means not subatomic particles, and moving at speed lesser than the speed of light. Now, the two pillars of modern science, quantum physics and relativity, are violently contradictory. That means what quantum physics proposes, everything is waves. And relativity proposes that are particles, so they are contradictory. They cannot be simultaneously true. So, Nobel laureate Steven Weinberg, he says, as we make progress towards understanding the expanding universe, the problem itself expands. Slow down, please. The problem itself expands so that the solution always seems to recede us. Another astrophysicist, John Wheeler, because the cosmological theories are changing so much, he has made a statement. Don't chase after a bus, a girl, or a cosmological theory if you miss one. Because in a few minutes, another one is coming. Next, please. So now, with respect to birds, it is possible that some birds can be white and some birds can be black. But it's not possible that some matter follow quantum laws and some matter follow relative laws. Because at the origin of the universe, the macroscopic and the microscopic was one. So which laws were applicable at that time? There has to be one set of laws which are applicable. So that's why it's very difficult to explain which laws were applicable at that time. Scientists are trying to get up with a grand unified theory. But it's not working out. So, go ahead please. Okay, go behind. Go behind. Yeah. So, the point is that the bird's analogy is not intended to caricature scientists. We have nothing against scientists. But the point is that science should not be misused, misinterpreted, or misrepresented to promote atheism. Science gives some knowledge, and that knowledge is useful. But if we extrapolate scientific knowledge to say that there is no God, then that is what we are against. So here, science and the limitations of its methodology are what are explained. So, science has produced technology. Pure science or research, that is science, and technology is applied science. What most people see is technology. They see the benefits of technology. They see a mobile. Some village people are like, kahin se bhi, kabhi bhi, kisi se bhi baat kar sakte. This scientist ne to kamal kar diya. These scientists log hi bhagwan hai na. That's what. People are amazed. How can somebody do like that? But if we think carefully, the cell phone, the mobile, first of all, the semiconductor effect on which all electronics and telecommunication operates. I did my engineering electronics and telecommunication. There is no explanation for the semiconductor effect. Now, some elements are conductors, some are insulators, some are semiconductors. We can call them semi-insulators also if you want. Now, why some elements are like that? Nobody knows. So scientists also don't know. Scientists have not created that effect of semiconductor properties. They have just tapped it. And secondly, the mechanism of transmission of electromagnetic waves through the ionosphere, that is also not created by scientists. The ionosphere is created already there in the atmosphere, created by God. Also, the mechanism for transmission is also created by God. All that we do is tap it. Have a device which converts sound into waves. Have another device which converts waves into sound. So yes, they can take credit for that. But that is just tapping. That is just mechanical work. So now, just imagine a person who has come from a tribal area, who has never seen irrigation or harvesting. So he comes to a fruit orchard. And then he sees the farmer, the harvester, putting some seed in the ground. He puts the seed in the ground, covers it with earth, waters it, and then he keeps watching. From that seed, grows, 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 and a tree comes. And the tree gives a mango. Are ye farmer ne to kamal kar diya. Mitti se aam bana diya. Now, has the farmer done anything miraculous? No. First of all, the farmer did not make the seed. Nor did he make the mechanism by which the seed transforms into a tree and a fruit. All that he has done is tapped the pre-existing mechanism. He knows, okay, if you take a seed, put it under the ground, water it, then it will grow and disappear. He doesn't know how it happens, he doesn't make it happen. He just taps it so that it happens. Same way, technology means they are tapping phenomena. Pre-existing phenomena created by God are tapped by technology. That's why technology comes from the Sanskrit taksha, and taksha means craftsmanship. That's what technology actually is. It's craftsmanship, although sophisticated. So that's why, although technology is marvelous within a narrow band, but it also depends on God. As in our drama, I said, who made the brain of the scientist? So even the technological mechanisms are not created, they are tapped by scientists.
And another thing is, when we talk about technology, technology is different from science. Science is pure knowledge, why things exist. But technology means how to make things work. That's all that is. There's a difference between the two. So the working of technology does not prove the methodology of science. Just because technology is right does not mean that science is right. Science and everything that it says is right. People think that science is one unit of knowledge and everything must be right. So a simple example. Suppose you have started a business and you have a friend, a colleague of your father, who is an expert business consultant. Every decision that you have to take, you ask him. And the guidance he gives is perfect. You accept the guidance and you flourish. Today you have got a stomachache. Will you go to him? Will you go to him? His track record is 100%. Every single time you have a difficulty, he has solved your difficulty. Still you will not go to him. Why? Because his specialization is different. He is expert in finance, but that does not mean he is expert in medicine. For that you have to go to someone else. Similarly, there are two branches. There is physics and there is metaphysics. Physics deals with the structure of matter. Metaphysics deals with the purpose of existence. So scientists may be specialists, experts in the study of matter. But that does not give them the right to make statements about metaphysics, about the purpose of life. That's why there is no scientific experiment which can prove the non-existence of God. Still, many people feel that it's unscientific to believe in God. So, that's why this conception that based on science, we cannot believe in God, that's completely wrong. Science is a very limited body of knowledge. And it may work as far as technology is concerned, and we can use that. But that should not be misused, misinterpreted, or misrepresented to promote atheism. Go ahead, please. So, when we talk about faith in God, there are two types of faith. There is reasonable faith and there is blind faith. So, the sage who came, yeah, blind faith, okay, kuch katha karni hai. And that sort of faith is undesirable. But reasonable faith is not only desirable, it is necessary. If when you go to a doctor and he tells you, take this medicine, our taking the medicine, is it not an act of faith? Can you say that I will not take the medicine because I don't believe? Even if you go to the best doctor in the world and you say that, doctor, I don't have faith. So first you cure me, then I will take your medicine. Even the best doctor cannot do that. When we go to a doctor, you have to put faith. But that faith is reasonable because of these things. When we go to a doctor, first of all, you don't go to a street sweeper. I got some stomach pain. You check his qualifications, his credentials. And there are so many doctors, you don't go to any doctor. You check his reputation. You check his credibility. How famous is he? Maybe somebody familiar to you refers you to him. And then after that also, you say, I have got pain in my leg. You say, I have got stomach upset. He says, you have to cut your leg. What nonsense. You check his diagnosis. Does it make sense? So this is sensible. And go ahead, please. So sensible means these four things we check. Credentials, credibility, reputation, and diagnosis. And then verifiable means when the doctor gives the medicine, we take it and we get cured. Then our faith increases. It's a good doctor. So the sensible part of the faith is before doing the activity. And the verifiable part comes after doing the activity. And when those two are there, then that faith is reasonable. It's not only desirable, but essential. So today, that when we are talking about the power of faith, it is which faith? Reasonable faith. So go ahead, please. Now, people think, okay, I have to put faith in material life, but why should I put faith in spiritual life? Why do you think faith in spiritual life is unreasonable? Because they feel material life, there is no alternative. You have to take a job, you have to go to a doctor, you have to take medicines. There is no alternative. So they are forced to put in faith. And they see the results also. Okay, at least some people get well, at least some people get jobs. But they feel in spiritual life, we can't see, it's beyond sense perception. And then
How do we know whether it is going to happen or not? And people feel that most people are not practicing spiritual life, so let me also not practice. That's why they feel that faith is unreasonable. But we will see, and they especially feel that there are so many cheaters. There are fake people. But then are there not fake doctors? Still we find out who is a genuine doctor and take the medicine. So we will see how faith in spirituality is also reasonable and necessary. Go ahead, please. So first we refuted seeing is believing. But now we will see and believe. The first thing about, so we will be discussing the acronym FAITH. So first F is the futility of godless living. If somebody just lives materialistically, what happens? Here Prabhupada would talk about John F. Kennedy. He was young, handsome, wealthy, powerful, charismatic, a beautiful wife, sweet children. He was what every American dreamt to be. And then suddenly, the American dream turned into a nightmare. He was going to, after winning a landslide victory in his second election campaign, he was going to the victory rally, and one small piece of metal came from somewhere, pierced his body. From top of the world, out of the world. In one moment. From hero to zero. That is material life. So people, we work so hard, what is the end? Nowadays people lose their health to gain wealth. There are call center jobs and all sorts of stressful jobs. People lose their health to gain wealth. And then they lose their wealth to regain their health. And when they start getting 30, 40, they have to take so many medicines. But in the end, they lose their health and their wealth. Isn't it? So what is the use? Is life meant to be like this? So here we see a frustrated person. Life is a struggle. So struggle, 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 and then die. Is that what life is meant for? Darwin proposed survival of the fittest. But Prabhupada refuted in one sentence. He said, even the fittest don't survive. Nobody survives. So, the life of modern people, you know, want. I want this, I want that, and then work. And when you work, there's so much anxiety because whether I'll get what I want or not. And then that's worry, and then there is weep. People cry. The modern life is characterized by hurry, worry, and sorry. No, hurry, I have to do this, I have to do that. And then worry, oh, will it work or not? Sorry, everything is just going wrong in my life. That is because they don't say hurry. Isn't it? They don't chant the names of hurry. when people die, they say Ram Naam Satya Hai. In some parts of the world, actually they say one more thing. Ram Naam Satya Hai, aur sab vyarth hai. But throughout the life, when people want to chant Ram Naam, they tell them, why are you wasting your time? At that time, their philosophy is, Ram Naam Vyartha Hai, Aur Sab Satya Hai. So which is true? Isn't it? Everything in material life is going to end with death. Is that what life is meant for? Just to struggle and then be knocked out of the scene of life? Is there no higher purpose to life? So, one who sees the futility of material existence, he opens his mind. Maybe there is something higher. It's like if we are sick. Now, there are people say, our devotee is not going to die. Then what is the difference? But if there is a higher spiritual existence, the devotees will be attaining that existence. So, if there is a possibility of that, one should open his mind to it. There is a disease. If there is a cure for that disease, then why not be open to investigating it? So, let's go to the next. Now, on the other hand, we see amazing design in the world. That's A. What is the design that we see? Here we see an airplane. So now the clouds carry water. The clouds are like a mobile, massive, airborne water tank. And they carry water. But the clouds are made up of such technology that entire airplane can go through it. And there is hardly even a drop of leakage. So even the WTC designers couldn't make aircraft-proof technology. But it's already there in nature. How did it come about? Similarly, photosynthesis. That is the only source of food on this entire planet. All of us exist because there is photosynthesis. But what is this photosynthesis? Actually, the plants, they just take in minerals, mud. Prabhupada would say that the lemon tree, it drinks water with its legs and gives citric acid in portable containers. Which industry can do that? Citric acid, small, small, portable, biodegradable containers. It's a miracle. Similarly, if we see the globe, right now, all of you are sitting quite comfortably. But we are moving at 64,000 miles per hour. High speed, not just singular, triple motion. The earth is rotating, it's revolving, the galaxy, the universe is expanding. Multiple motion is there, but we feel no motion. Now, those of you who know mechanical engineering, the sign of a good machine is that there is motion without the symptoms of motion. Like if there's a bike, jolts are there, jerks are there, which is a car, it's smoother. So if there is motion but there is no sign of motion, that's considered very good engineering. But even the best airplane, there are jerks, there are jolts, there is pollution, there is fuel consumption, there are accidents. But here we have a cosmic body moving faster than all with none of these problems. So how did it come about? Next, we lead the mic. No, copy. Go to the previous slide and come back again. Leave it, it will come. You just leave it as it is. Hold the mic. You need a good mic.
That the hair on our heads, which is an important element in human aesthetics, continues to grow throughout our lives, and we can style it. Special knowledge. Even the hair. Human eyebrows and eyelashes do not grow beyond a certain length. This is because it is better for us if they don't grow. But the hair on our heads, which is an important element in human aesthetics, continues to grow throughout our lives, and we can style it however we like. Now, just think. If your eyelashes grew like your hair, what would happen? Who commands your eyelashes to stop growing after a certain point? A person who considers these kinds of questions will understand immediately that every part of the body...
Pause it. So basically, here they show, compare the air on the eyelashes and the air on the head. So, both contain the same pigments, the same chemicals. But the hair in the eyelashes stops growing at a particular time. And the hair on the head keeps growing. Now, the same cells present, what makes the hair over here stop growing? Imagine if this hair started growing like the hair on the head. Now, if you see the bones, all the bones contain the same cells. Continue. So, now the bones are growing. Go to the previous one.
Human myra. There is total harmony and proportion in the growth of bones. The human brain begins to grow from childhood. At the same time, the skull also grows. If the growth of the skull and the brain were not proportional, and the skull remained small, the brain would explode under the pressure. But this does not happen. The skull and the brain grow together until a certain age, and the skull encircles and protects the brain like a cage. How do the bones that have been growing proportionally with one another know that they must stop growing after they reach a certain size? What would happen if the bones continued to grow? For example, if the bones of the rib cage did not stop growing at a certain point, they would pierce the flesh and protrude from it. But because of the careful operation...
So here they are showing the rib cage and the flesh. Continue it, let it go. So the rib cage grows separately and the skin grows separately. So how do the two stay coordinated? If the rib cage grew more than the skin would crack. So these two mechanisms are entirely separate. How do the cells know? Here we see the legs are growing, the head is growing. So if we see there are just cells which are reproducing, how do these cells know when I should stop or when I should keep reproducing? Who controls them? This is an ordinary cell which is reproducing. Now the beauty of the human body is because of the shape which we have. Now what determines the shape? The cutoff point when the cell stops growing. So if we see our hand, there are different cells which grow differently. And they are all made in such a way that they are flexible and usable. So what controls their coordinated growth? So not only the hand, but every part of the body, it's coordinated. The cells which are growing in our two legs, they are of two different sets of cells, but they all grow to the same length. If we cut off one finger, the same finger grows again, and it grows to the same shape. What makes it grow? So the design, not just the design, the coordination in the design that is there in the body, that is a very strong indication that there is super intelligence behind it. And now let's see what some of the most eminent scientists in the world have been saying about this. So Michael Faraday, we ought to value the privilege of knowing God's truth far beyond anything we can have in this world. So he accepted God. And what is God's wisdom? That's what he wanted to know. Michael Faraday is the pioneer of electromagnetism. And here is James Clerk Maxwell, another pioneer in quantum mechanics. He gave the wave equation. So Almighty God, who has created man in thine own image. That's old-fashioned English, but it basically is saying that his scientific research is like a prayer and an offering to God. Go ahead. So this Max Born, a Nobel laureate in physics. I saw in it the atom, the key to the deepest secret of nature. And it revealed to me the greatness of the creation and the creator. Go ahead. This is India's own Nobel laureate, Srinivasa Ramanujan. An equation for me has no meaning unless it represents a thought of God. Go ahead. For religion, God is at the beginning. For science, God is at the end. So where science ends, religion begins. Werner Heisenberg, another pioneer in quantum physics, is a higher power not influenced by our own wishes, which finally decides and judges. Again, Johannes Kepler. He considered his research as a prayerful offering of his intellect to God. Go ahead. Go behind. Even Kelvin, he said that if you think strongly enough, you'll be forced by science to believe in God. Newton, Copernicus, Einstein. Einstein's famous statement, God does not play dice with the universe. They all accepted the existence of God. So now, one of the reasons why people say God does not exist, why this world cannot be designed, is that there is so much suffering in this world. So he says, if God really exists, then God, why does God allow so much suffering? How can a benevolent God allow suffering? In fact, the whole philosophy of atheism is based on this. That how can God allow such things to happen? So once, a devotee went to a doctor. And this doctor was an atheist. When he saw this person, he was a devotee, he said, "You believe in God?" He said, "Of course." "God, if God exists, why are you suffering? Why are you sick? There are so many people who are suffering. Why does God let them suffer?" The very fact that people are suffering proves that there is no God. The devotee kept quiet. Then he went out and he saw one beggar on the street coughing. He's coughing. And he came back into the doctor's place. He says, "There are no doctors in the city." "What do you mean?" "I'm a doctor. There are no doctors in the city." "How do you say that? Come out with me. I will show you. You see this beggar?" "Yes." "You see his disease?" "Yes." "The proof that he is diseased, the fact that he is diseased proves that there are no doctors." "What do you mean?" "Yeah, the doctor is meant to remove disease. And if there is disease, if disease exists, that means that is the proof that doctor doesn't exist." "No. That is because he is not coming to the doctor to be cured." "Exactly. Why are people suffering? Because they are not going to God. If they go to God, follow the instructions of God, they will not suffer." So the existence of suffering does not prove the non-existence of God. The existence of suffering can also be because people are not harmonizing with God. People are not following God. That's why we have to very carefully understand the Vedic scriptures. Unfortunately, this is where other religions fall short, because they do not accept the doctrine of reincarnation, although it is there in their scriptures. But they don't accept it. So they can't explain why people are suffering. And then some religions say that suffering is not because of your own karma, it's a test from God. But immediately the question comes, why does God test different people differently? Some people are well, some people are poor, some people are diseased, some people are healthy. Why? He said, "No, that is God's will, accept it." And people lose faith. When the WCTC disaster occurred, after that, the Pope was asked, "Why does this disaster take place?" So he said, "I'm sorry, but the Bible gives no answer to the problem of evil. It says God is not the author of evil, but they don't know who is." So the biggest disaster in modern history and the biggest religious authority has no answer for it. How can people retain their faith? But if we understand the scriptures properly, then we understand that there is suffering because we are not harmonizing with God. So there is design in this world which indicates that God exists. And there is also suffering in this world which to the atheists is proof that there is no God. But is it possible that design and suffering can come together in one place? Is there any place in this world, or is there a situation in this world where there is plan, there is provision of necessities, but along with that there is suffering also? Imagine a person, a millionaire's son, who is going in a car through a mountainous area and suddenly his car crashes over. He jumps out of the car before it collides with a rock and explodes. And he keeps falling down, down, down. And he falls deep into a valley. Fortunately, he falls on a sand dune. He falls unconscious, but when he comes back, he's still alive. However, because of the impact on his head, he has lost his memory. So he wakes up and then he doesn't know who he is. Then some tribals come over there and they say, he's with us. They said, "You will live with us now. Where will you go?" And they give him a name, they give him a role and a goal in the society. "You become a woodcutter and you cut wood for us." And he starts cutting wood every day. He's a millionaire's son, meant to live in royalty. But he's cutting wood and carrying logs. And then his father comes, searching for his son. And he sees his son. "Hey son, what are you doing there? Come back home." "What home? I don't know you." "No, come back. I don't know who you are. Get out of my way." Then the father realizes what has happened. Then father gets a doctor who cures amnesia. And the doctor, he sees, "Hey, do you know who you are?" "Yeah, I know, I'm a woodcutter." "No, no, sit. No, I'm not interested." Then the doctor, in order to cure this prince, who is now mistaking himself to be a woodcutter, he has to give him shock treatment. Why does he need shock treatment?
so that he become open and submissive, lost in his own world. And then he gets a shock. What? He'll open his eyes and start seeing. Okay. Now, you remember this box? Yeah. I remember it. Where did you see it? And gradually, he starts getting cured. So, when one is forgetful, there are two ways to cure. One is shock treatment, and the other is the memory treatment. You show him objects by which the memory can be revived. If the patient doesn't cooperate with the memory treatment, then the shock treatment is required. And the more he cooperates, the less the shock treatment is. Similarly, the sufferings of this world are, we are all the children of God. We have fallen from the spiritual world to this material world. And society has given us the identity. Now all of us have a name, but if you think about it, did we exist first or did our name exist first? We existed before our name. That means we are not our name. Our name is not our identity. Who are we? This is the identity which is given to us by our society. So God comes in this world and He invites us, come back to the spiritual world. Live in, God is not just a millionaire. The people in this world are Lakhpati, Karodpati, Arabpati, Kharappati. But Krishna is Lakshmipati. He is the Lord of the Goddess of Fortune. And He is our Father. And He invites us. Where is God? I don't believe. I don't care. Then who is the doctor that God employs? It is material nature, Maya Devi. She gives shock treatment. Adhyatmik klesh, adhibhautik klesh, adhidaivik klesh, janma mrityu jaragadi. They're shock treatment to reform us, to purify us, to make us congenial. And the more we... So there is shock treatment in this material world all around. But in the temples, there is the memory treatment. Come, this is the deity. This is the holy name. These are the scriptures. And the more we start taking the memory treatment, immediately you see the kleshas decrease. The adhyatmik, adhibhautik, adhidaivik, they all start decreasing. So, the suffering is there just to make us aware of our real identity. That's why God is not cruel to give us suffering. Actually, we have turned away from God and we are creating suffering for ourselves. So God wants to save us from suffering. Now, when we put our hand in fire, we feel pain. We feel burn. Now, is that burning sensation good or bad? The pain is bad. Nobody wants to suffer. But if there were no pain there, after some time we would have no hand. It would burn to ashes. So that pain saves us from greater pain. So like that, the shock treatment, suffering of this world, saves us from the greater suffering of living in this world forever. So the sufferings are what are meant to make us turn towards God. Just as when there is a disease in the body, you get fever. The fever indicates I should go to a doctor. So like that, the suffering of this world, they indicate something is wrong. So we should go to a spiritual doctor. A guru, and he will cure us. So that's why, go ahead please. So now, we are continuing with the point of A, amazing design. When we see the design in this world, whenever any manufacturer makes a very complicated object, which we saw, this world is, then he will always provide a manual. If somebody makes a very sophisticated device and doesn't provide a manual, then the device becomes useless for the user. So God is a super intelligent designer. If He has made this world, for the car there is a manual, but for a human being, what is He meant to live for? Is there no manual? That is the Vedic scriptures. So they are the manual for life, and when we live according to them, we will see that we will become happy. So now these two parts, F and A, futility of godless living and amazing design in this world, they are a part of sensible faith. We are discussing reasonable faith. There are two characters, sensible and reasonable. Go ahead. So now we are coming to the verifiable part. What is happening here? A person is using the Mercedes for plowing. So now when a person uses a Mercedes for plowing, three things happen. The Mercedes gets spoiled, the field gets spoiled, and the driver gets frustrated. So the Shastra has explained that our human body is a very precious vehicle. It is meant for spiritual life. And using the human body for materialistic pursuits
It is like using a Mercedes for plowing. Let's see how. What is the first thing that happens? No, go behind please. First thing that happens when you use the Mercedes for plowing, the Mercedes gets spoiled. So when we use the material body for enjoyment, what happens? Think of any form of enjoyment. It leads to suffering. Try to eat and enjoy, leads to obesity, leads to indigestion. Try to smoke and enjoy, it leads to lung diseases. A cigarette, it creates holes in the pocket and holes in the lungs. So, try to drink and enjoy, the liver gets spoiled. Try to have sex and enjoy, you get AIDS. And for AIDS, there is no aid. When aid stops, aid and S stops, that's AIDS. So, if human life is meant for bodily enjoyment, then that very enjoyment is the cause of bodily suffering. That means, that's not what human life is meant for. So the human body is spoiled by what we call as enjoyment. Now what happens to the field? The field is the environment, the earth, the ecology. This is a biologist, E.O. Wilson. He did a survey of all the species on the planet. And he found that every species contributes to the ecology of the planet. Now if the grass, it is burned too much, then the herbivores suffer. If the herbivores die, then the carnivores suffer. But he found that there is one species which makes no contribution to the ecology of the planet. Which is that? The human species. Now the human species is the most intelligent species. But it makes no contribution. There will be no problem for anyone if the human beings are annihilated from this world. In fact, all ecological problems will be solved if human beings are annihilated. It's a glowing tribute to the contribution of humanity to the earth, isn't it? Why is that? In a classroom, if a student is more intelligent, he should be able to contribute more to the class. The humans are the most intelligent species. Why are they not able to contribute? The Bhagavatam answers. Bhagavatam says that this human life is meant for spiritual inquiry. We don't contribute to this world, we fulfill the purpose of the existence of this world. So, humans are an asset to the planet only when they live spiritually. When they live materialistically, they spoil the planet. That's like spoiling the ecology. And the driver gets frustrated. What is the driver getting frustrated? We saw suicide. There is no other species on this planet which commits suicide. Except human species. There is no other species which suffers from stress, depression, hypertension. There is no other species that sings songs, "My heart is broken because my beloved has left me." Why? Because our love is misdirected. So human life is not meant for materialistic living. When we live like that, we suffer, our body suffers, and our environment suffers. It's an incompatible use. So, what we are talking about here is the manual. When we go against the manual, the machine malfunctions. The same way, when we go against the scriptures, we suffer. This itself is a proof that the scriptures are a manual for life. And we'll see positive proof later. Go ahead. Now, this is I is the integrity of the spiritual practitioners. The devotees. This is one cause which makes people lose faith, and this something also which can help people to gain faith. The kind of religionists that were depicted by our Panditji. When people see that, they lose faith. As Nattu was, what kind of person is not doing what he is saying? But then, this is because spirituality has these two parts, philosophy and religion. So when both are there, then spirituality goes properly. When they have proper philosophical knowledge and they have proper practices, then people are spiritually living. But most people either they don't have philosophical knowledge or they don't practice in their life what they are teaching. But if we see the life of Srila Prabhupada, he was a man of total integrity. When he met Alfred Ford, one of the wealthiest persons in the world at that time, he could have just flattered him and he could have got a lot of money from him. But he was not interested in money. When the first time we met him, "So, you are the great grandson of Henry Ford. Where is he now?" That means he reminded him of the temporary nature of material existence. He reminded him of the futility of material existence. That's the saint. Another very famous player, Peter Burwash, a tennis player, tennis champion. Then when he met Srila Prabhupada, he said that, you know, I am very busy. I cannot chant 16 rounds. Can you initiate me if I just chant 4 rounds? He said, no, I cannot. He could have just compromised. But he didn't. He is a man of integrity. One time, there were some devotees within ISKCON who's got the misconception that Prabhupada is God. And they started propagating, Prabhupada is God. And many ISKCON devotees started believing it. And Prabhupada was asked, Swami, they are saying that they are God. The Prabhupada had just to say one yes. And millions of people all over the world would have worshipped him as God. But what did Prabhupada say? There was another spiritual leader. When he was asked, your followers call you Bhagwan. Are you Bhagwan? He said, no. Then why do you let them call you Bhagwan? He says, I don't want to disturb their faith. Faith in whom? Faith in Bhagwan or faith in a pseudo Bhagwan? But he said like that. He didn't. But what did Prabhupada do? These people are saying you are God. He said, kick them out of ISKCON. I am not God, I am the servant of God. All of us are the servants of God. So that was his integrity. So the guru is like a doctor. And the doctor is not meant to flatter the patient. Doctor is meant to tell him, this is the disease, these are going to be the consequences, you have to stop doing this and you have to do this. Chant 16 rounds, follow the regular principles. So Prabhupada did not flatter anyone. That was his integrity. He gave proper philosophy and he gave proper religion. And that's why when I first came to Krishna consciousness, I saw the devotee so intelligent, so dynamic. And yet, they're so dedicated to the spiritual path. So this integrity, if there is lacking, then the faith falls. And if we meet devotees with integrity, our faith increases. So go ahead. So, when there is religion but no philosophy, then that leads to sentimentalism or fanaticism. Like we see jihad. If you don't agree with me, I will kill you. So there is no philosophy. So that is not what is desired. And conversely, go ahead. If there is philosophy but there is no religion. And people just talk. Maybe it's like that. Maybe it's like that. And these philosophers, they sit and think. Sunday afternoon on an armchair, they sit and think. Maybe God exists. You know, there's good design in this world. And they open the newspaper. So much problem. Probably God doesn't exist. Anyway, the pleasure in this brandy exists. If we drink it. So that is there. Mental speculation, that is useless. So there has to be philosophy and there is religion. And that's what we will see in Krishna consciousness. A systematic philosophy. Everything reasonable. This is how it is. And practices, chanting 16 rounds or whatever number of rounds we can. Practicing the regulative principles. So when this is there, then there is a dynamic spirituality. And what is the result of that? When there is integrity, you will experience the transforming potency of spirituality. You see spirituality transforming hearts, transforming lives. Recently, one of our senior leaders, Indradum Maharaj, he went to Siberia, the coldest part of the world. And he went there and he saw some very hefty looking people. And they came and offered him obeisances. Asked, who are you? He said, I am a gang leader. He said, really? He said, I was a gang leader and I have just been released from jail. He says, before I went to jail, I was introduced to devotees. And I came to know about chanting. But I was in the gang at that time. So when I went to the jail, I was in a fight. I was wounded in the confrontation. And so I couldn't do any work in the jail. So I would just sit and chant. And there are gangs even within the jail. So there are two gangs. But I preached to one of the gang leaders and made him into a devotee. And then he protected me from the other gang. And then when I started chanting, I felt so nice, felt so happy that the jail leaders, they told me to teach chanting to all the other prisoners. And I taught them chanting. And they became very peaceful. And I was sentenced 5 years in jail, but after 3.5 years they released me because of good behavior. But he said actually they were unhappy where I was going because there would be nobody to control the other prisoners. But he said, now the problem is I have come out of the jail and my rounds have decreased. It's because I am free. So Maharaj told him that see this world also as a jail. The walls are birth, old age, disease and death. Nobody can escape from it very easily. The chanting is the only way to escape.
So miraculous stories of transformation are there, where people who are hardcore criminals, they become transformed. So this transformation is not possible by any other way.
Just like when you take a medicine, the disease gets cured. So like that, when we chant Hare Krishna, the heart and the life gets transformed. So now, some people say, especially the atheists say, you claim that you have seen God, how do I know that I have seen God? How do I know that you have seen God? We say, don't worry about seeing God. You see the transformation that will take in the life. And in any part of the world, in America, Australia, Europe, Africa, last year in the Times of India, they said that, what is India's number one export commodity? Is it software engineers? Is it Indians speaking English? He said, no. If you go to Cambodia, you go to Cambodia, if you go to Guatemala, you won't find any software engineers there. But you will find a Krishna temple there. So the Times of India, they said, rebirth of Krishna. Krishna is India's number one export commodity. Why? Because all over the world, people are being transformed by the process of Krishna consciousness. So this transforming potency is something which all of us can experience. Millions all over the world have already experienced. So now we are coming to the verifiable part of the faith. Like when you take the medicine, you get cured. And when you chant Hare Krishna, we get cured. So there are landmarks on the path. Go ahead. There is a systematic process of how things happen. When a little Shraddha, with a little faith, we come in the association of devotees, Sadhu Sangha. And then you start chanting Hare Krishna, Bhajana Kriya. Then you will lead to Anartha Nivritti. All the negative things will start going away from the heart. Then there will be Nishtha. Then there will be Ruchi, Prem, Asakti, Bhav and Prem. So step by step, what will happen when you practice spiritual life? That is told. Just like when there is an experiment. So first step, second step, third step, fourth step. What will happen? Same way it's told in spiritual life. So if we do follow the process, we will get the result. That's why it's verifiable. And the last, happiness. So once one of our leaders went to the Arabian countries for preaching. And of course, he went in civilian clothes because they don't allow devotional clothes to be worn. So he went there and all his papers were in order. But still they checked all his papers and they checked again. And they checked again. And finally let him go. Asked him, why did you check my paper 3 times? They said that you look too happy. We thought you must be smuggling something. So,
that's happiness. We will experience it. So, sukham kartum avyayam.
When we practice Krishna consciousness, we will experience happiness. And once I was giving a class, so somebody asked me, are you happy?
So, I told him, yes, I'm happy because I'm in the path of happiness. I'm much happier than what I was before, and I can see those who are ahead of me, they are much happier than me. So we are progressing. And we can see that. Anybody who's practiced Krishna consciousness, so much of the mind's agitation, the mind's troubles, they go down. We experience the benefit. Our happiness keeps increasing more and more.
Go ahead, please.
So now, if we don't accept faith in God, then what is the result? Now, materialistic science does not allow you to believe in God. It does not allow you to believe in your own existence. Do you know that? According to some mechanistic science, you are an illusion. Because there is no you. One scientist says, we have looked in the brain, we have looked in the heart, we have looked everywhere. There is no you present. So now, do you exist or do you not exist? Obviously, we exist. But that, if we are going to follow that science, reductionistic science, that is not real science, that is one type of science, which is atheistic. It doesn't even accept the existence of God, doesn't accept our own existence. So what do we deprive ourselves of? Go ahead, this sort of science. We'll never know what is the goal of life. We'll never be able to control our mind and senses. Currently in psychology, there are 6 different theories about what is the mind. Some say the mind is matter, some say the mind is spirit, some say the mind is dual, some say the mind is imaginary, it doesn't exist only. Like that, their theoretical propositions are different. But one thing is common. None of them help people to control their mind. So that is the result. So, why do we have to go through all this? We practice Krishna consciousness and we get the benefit. Go ahead. So then how do we develop faith? It's simple. Aha prasade govinde nama brahmani vaishnavi. So of course,
That will be there afterward, just 2 few minutes more. If you take Mahaprasad, Nama Govinda, you chant the name of Govinda and associate with devotees. 3 things if you do, faith will develop. So when you come from Prerna, you do all these things. So faith is like muscles. You know, when somebody attacks us, if we have good muscles, we can defend ourselves. But when calamities come in our life, when troubles come in our life, you know, at that time our physical muscles will not help us. It is our spiritual muscles that will help us. So that is our faith. So just as by lifting weights our physical muscles can develop, so similarly we have spiritual dumbbells. What is the spiritual dumbbell? This is our spiritual dumbbell. And what is the weight lifting? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So if you do this, automatically the faith will develop. Go ahead. Yeah, so we have to take a leap of faith. We have to do the required. And when we do it, chant Hare Krishna, associate with devotees, we'll develop faith. We'll conclude with a small PPT. Go ahead. So, oh, sound, please. Pause it. Sound you can hear? Please the volume. Go behind. Escape it and come back. Yeah. Go ahead. The caterpillar had turned into a butterfly and the thorny cactus had given rise to a flower. We can leave the choices to God when we have faith. And God will allow God to give us the best when we have faith. We leave the choices to Him. That is the ultimate power of faith. Because the power of faith brings the power of God with us. So I'll summarize. We started this discussion with. First point was how faith is needed not just in religion but in every walk of life. At every stage of life, birth, education, employment, marriage, childbirth, traveling, sitting, walking, eating. Faith is needed even in science. It's because seeing is not believing. There are things which we see but don't believe. There are things which you don't see but believe. Then, so how science also operates on faith, the bird theory. Science operates, you observe something and you say that is a general truth. Later on you find it's not general. We saw how that applies to the world of science. And then we discussed how this faith is necessary and desirable. That is reasonable faith. So reasonable faith has 2 characteristics, sensible and verifiable. This doctor example. And then how is faith in spirituality sensible? Because you see, otherwise this life ends in death, uselessly, futility of godless living. That was F. What was A? Amazing design. So we saw the quotes of the scientists, the VCD clipping of the human body and the mechanism of the clouds and the photosynthesis, and I, the integrity of devotees, we discussed Prabhupada's pastimes. And then T, the transforming potency. We will see practically the result. And H is the happiness which you all experience. And if we don't accept faith, don't have faith, then we will never know the goal of life, we will never be learned to control our mind and senses. We will deprive ourselves. And then we saw how faith can be developed by associating with devotees, chanting Hare Krishna and honoring Mahaprasadam. It's like it is our faith, our spiritual muscle that will protect us at the time of danger. And so we should take a leap of faith. And lastly we saw, if we have faith, then the power of God is with us. God always gives the best to those who leave the choices to Him. Thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna. Vedic and material definition of science. Srila Prabhupada defines science means to know things as they are. That is what he called the science, to know things as they are. Now, according to modern science, now what modern scientists do, what they are following is actually one type of science. It is not universal. Just like when we talk about medicine, allopathy is one type of medicine. Ayurveda is another type of medicine. Homeopathy is another. So like that, what modern science follows, that is one type of science. It is called as mechanistic science or reductionistic science. So this science operates, that means you are talking about, I am now talking about the material definition of science. This science operates on the principle that everything can be understood and explained if we just break it down into smaller and smaller and smaller parts. That means it's called mechanistic science because it works for machines. Like a machine, it's a big machine. But if you take it out part, okay, this part contributes this, this part contributes this, this part contributes this. But and when it comes together, it has a particular function. So the machine can be understood by breaking it down into parts. So modern science operates on the principle that everything can be understood by breaking it down into its parts. But even by normal experience, it's not true. It's like if we have, say, a beautiful painting. Now, see, the painting is there, it has an aesthetic effect. Or take another example, say, words. Now, if you read a letter from someone, and that letter says, "You are a fool." Now, what is your reaction? Who sent that? I will teach him a lesson. See? Now, try to apply reductionism to this. Now, you are a fool. This has produced the effect of anger. But you cut apart that letter, take the Y apart, take the O apart, take the U apart. That you are a fool is just a pattern of black ink on a piece of paper. Where is the emotion of anger produced present there? It is certainly not in the dot pattern. It is not there in the book. The book doesn't get angry. So where is it present? So human life in its totality cannot be explained through reductionism. Now if I don't read that book, I won't feel angry. That means that emotion of anger has got to do something with the book or with the letter. But still the letter is just dot pattern on white paper. So where is that emotion present? That means it's present, that means that dot pattern has got some higher dimensional properties associated with it, which cannot be understood through atoms and molecules, through mechanistic science. So like that, our emotions, science cannot explain it. Where do they come from? So mechanistic science, it operates on the principle that we can understand everything by breaking it down into small, small parts. But Albert and Georgie, one Nobel laureate physicist, he said, "I started out to understand the mystery of life. So I started with the living organism and ended up, I started with the living organism which had life and ended up with the atoms which had no life. So life slipped away from my fingers along the way. In my old age, I am retracing the path to find out where life is." So that's why the materialistic reductionistic science is incomplete. It may be useful, It's fabulous for some small applications, but it cannot explain the totality of existence. So it is said that science is incomplete philosophy, because science deals with only matter, a small part of reality. Our emotions, they are reality, but science doesn't deal with them. So science is incomplete philosophy, whereas philosophy is the complete science, because philosophy explains the entirety of life. So when we talk about Vedic science, that is philosophy. That talks about material subject matters, that talks about spiritual subject matters. So that's the difference between modern science and the Vedic definition of science. Okay? Any other questions?
We can ask one to one later.
Thank you.
Chaitanya Prabhu will be available here. You can meet him personally, because many students are waiting for a different type of puja called as paid puja. We thank Chaitanya Charan Prabhu. Simultaneously, we also have another very wonderful devotee from Pune, Rasikanand Prabhu. Are you here? He's a very humble devotee. He graduated from PICT.